Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of The Diary of a CEO. In this episode, the host engages in a thought-provoking conversation with a captivating individual who explores a range of intellectual subjects. The discussion delves into the intriguing intersections of tropical fruit, physics, and the current global conflicts that weigh heavily on the mind. This episode promises to challenge your perspectives and ignite your curiosity. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
It's on, so please do double check if you subscribed. And thank you so much, because in a strange way, you're part of our history and you're on this journey with us. And I appreciate you for that. So yeah, thank you. Eric, you are a particularly captivating individual for the very fact that you grace so many different intellectual subjects. As we sit here now having this conversation, I want to know what subjects at this moment in time are occupying most of your thoughts and most of your thinking. We have a strong listenership here, and I think the responsibility that I have meeting someone like you is to understand what we should be talking about.
So top of mind for me at the moment is tropical fruit and physics. I'm not kidding.
Tropical fruit and physics?
Yeah. But that's just because you're catching me on a particular day.
Okay.
And my local 99 Ranch Market ran out of rambutan, which I'm addicted to. No, I have serious issues with tropical fruit. I'm completely obsessed by it.
What about this week? What's been occupying most of your thoughts this week?
Well, the apocalypse and physics.
Why'd you say the apocalypse? And what do you mean by the apocalypse?
Well, we're becoming inured to the apocalypse. We just watched hypersonic missiles slam into a modern city on TV. And we're watching one of the world's most remarkable civilizations, the Persians, take direct hits from both Israel and the U.S., and I'm just beside myself. I mean, this is incredibly dramatic. If you think about, you know, just the idea of the Jews and the Persians are both still here. And, you know, one of the things that I find really just painful is that I care about certain cultures that I know well more than others. And these are two of my absolute favorites.
What's going on at this moment in time? Because it feels like there's more conflict than there's ever been. I don't know whether that's just a bias that I have at this moment, but whether I'm looking at the wrong social media algorithm, but it feels like the world is tense.
Well, you're too young for the Cold War. So I don't know how old you are.
32.
Yeah, so you really missed. I grew up in a different world where things were tense because there were two players, and it was more or less the U.S. and the Soviets. And then we decided, one of the dumbest things we ever came up with, a very smart man came up with one of the dumbest ideas, which was the end of history. And, you know, the post-World War II order is here to stop us from using the technologies that came out of this. And, I talk about this a lot. There was a six-month period between November of 52 and April of 53 where we unlocked first the power of the nucleus, because we could fuse hydrogen. And the other thing we were able to do was figure out the three-dimensional structure of nucleic acid in the form of the double helix. And suddenly, in no time flat, we had access to the two most powerful levers humanity has ever had, or perhaps ever will. And so we're just not in a position to deal with this. And the remarkable thing—
What does that mean, sorry? In terms of, you said we had access to the two most remarkable things.
Well, the hydrogen bomb is not something that has ever been used by anyone against an enemy.
This is the first full-scale test of a hydrogen device. If the reaction goes, we're in the thermonuclear era. 3, 2, 1.
So we're awaiting its first use in war. We did use fission devices, but we didn't use fusion devices. And they're at completely different scales. So the Hiroshima and Nagasaki are the only two situations in which a nuke has ever been used against a population, civilian or otherwise. And we don't know, for example, whether or not, I don't know, at least COVID had its origins in a bioweapons program. So at some level, we're playing with levers and tools that are so powerful. Do you realize that the key ingredient that made COVID so unique was a 4-amino acid sequence inserted into spike protein? So that's 12 nucleotides coding for 4 amino acids shut down planet Earth for a couple of years. That's how powerful this is, you know, and there are very few things that have this kind of leverage. In 2017, we had a discovery, a white paper called Attention is All You Need. And if, oddly, many of us dealing with AI and LLMs and talking that language don't even realize there's a paper that you can read that changed everything. It's 8 authors out of Google, I think, and that opened up AI. Satoshi in 2008, 2009 with the solution to the distributed double spend problem where you could effectively port conservation laws from the physical world into the digital world, giving us digital gold, but just as a beginning. These ideas that have such high leverage are making us powerful beyond any previous world with no attendant increase in our wisdom, in our ability to use and wield these things. And right now you're seeing the face where we're unveiling, what does drone warfare look like in FPV? What is
FPV?
First person, where you know, where you're looking through like the lens of the drone as it slams into a personnel carrier. You know, maybe you've seen this on Telegram where you're just watching individuals being menaced by mechanical flying birds equipped to kill them. So we didn't know what drone warfare looked like. This is the beginning of drone warfare. We didn't know what hypersonic missiles look like when they slam into a population center. I was just in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
A couple months ago. And I was in, you know, shelters because the Houthis and some of the Palestinian Arabs in Gaza were letting off missiles. But not like this. Persians really, you know, and by the way, they're choosing, I think, to not inflict maximal damage. I don't think that they could have gotten the body count a lot higher if they'd wanted to. They're trying to speak the language of violence in a very measured fashion.
So is this a particularly tense moment, or is it just the bias that I have because I've not been through these things before? Is there something different?
You're looking. I can't even believe the question. You're looking at the end, man. This is the beginning. This is a slow rollout of a completely different world. We've all been in a completely artificially stagnant bubble for decades. My entire life up until now has been in a bubble. The only people who've seen real life are extremely old.
Who are those people that have seen real life?
Well, I would say people who went through the Depression, World War II. You know, in China, people who went through Mao's Great Leap Forward. But most of us have no idea of what, like a real pandemic, like a Spanish flu or Black Plague is like. We don't know what Poland went through, where they lost, you know, I don't know, 20-25% of their population to war. Look at the statistics on the Battle of Stalingrad. We don't really understand. Our whole life has been in a bubble.
You said, I'm looking at the end.
Having navigated the complexities of living in a bubble, the conversation shifts to the significance of tradition in shaping belief systems, delving into the nuances of Christianity and its societal implications.
Christianity, not so much. I think the first time somebody crystallized that for me was Sam Harris. It's a really important point. But you're heir to an incredibly powerful and important tradition. And if we don't have a Christian substrate, we're in real trouble because all of our society is based on an assumption of a Christian substrate.
You're advising me to be Christian in tradition, but not in necessarily in belief.
Well, this is the thing. You're alienated because you think that you have to be a believer in order to go in. Otherwise, you're faking it.
Yeah.
get over yourself. That's not how it works.
That's true. That's me just me being honest. I do think that if I went to a church and I sung and I prayed and stuff, and I didn't believe, I would, that I'd be like, it'd be fake.
Okay. Do you imagine that all those people who go to church are just sitting there 100% sure that there's a Jesus to pray to? Do you know any Christians?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not like that. They sneak off and do bad things. If they were confident that Jesus was watching everything that they were doing, and they were constantly talking about how they sin. I'm a sinner. Right? It's a very complicated, interesting piece of kit. And my claim is that, you know, I said the Lord's Prayer as part of going to high school. I sat in a church, a chapel at a high school in LA that had a stained glass window with an American soldier trampling a Nazi flag into the stained glass window. It was amazing.
How does this link to me? I was about to say, don't you have faith that we'll just be able to kind of keep this? It feels like a bit of a standoff.
So you're the one with the faith. I'm the one who's nervous. You look, you're the believer. I'm not going to trust that. No. I'm going to get my hands dirty and try to do something about it.
Do you know what? I think in part it's because, as you said, I've been alive for 32 years, and through that time has been relative peace, especially in the Western world. So it's all I've ever known. So I'm born with this assumption that this is just kind of how it goes, that there's always threat, but we kind of figure it out.
Come to the Pacific Palisades. It looks like Gaza.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got some friends that lost their houses there. You know,
checked out Lahaina in West Maui recently?
No.
It's an absolute disaster.
Is AI a protagonist in this story? Is it?
Sure.
In what respect?
Well, what do you think about it? We're going through a wild revolution at the moment, and I just hear people saying the dumbest things about it.
What do I think about it? I'm scared I might say something dumb now. But
well, let's try it, because I'm going to say something dumb.
I think, well, I look at both sides of the coin, and I look at the opportunity and the threat. My concern when I hear about the CEOs of the biggest AI companies in the world talking about this fast takeoff is that the transition will be too quick for us to adjust. And when they say fast takeoff, they mean that AGI like arrives and the rate of its learning accelerates so quickly that it really disrupts the need for human beings to do a lot of the sort of jobs we're doing today that are centered on intelligence.
Which jobs require intelligence?
Pretty much all of them these days, because we've had the Industrial Revolution where we've outsourced a lot of labor to machines, but...
I don't think so.
Really?
I think a large portion of our conversation was actually an LLM. We didn't actually get to the stuff outside of the LLM. You and I are two chatbots for the most part. You're a good one.
Thank you.
I'm on a huge platform again, you know? But my claim is that that's the really disturbing part, that more or less we're LLMs. More or less we don't do a single intelligent thing all day long. And the reason that they're able to mimic us is because we don't realize that intelligence is a last resort for us. We try to automate. Like, you know, if you think about greetings, your assistant was very kind. I got out of a black car that you guys sent around, and I was greeted with the phrase, "There he is, the man, the myth," and I knew what was coming next, the legend, right? Because that is a sort of humorous way of giving an intimate greeting, but it's still an LLM. And I'm not saying that your assistant is an LLM. I'm saying that more or less what we do all day long is LLM interactions. Hey, buddy, how are you? Good, good. Things have been really busy. How about you? Well, I got some travel coming up, kind of excited about it, but I have to get through some work first. I understand. That's an entirely scripted conversation. That's why I'm trying to say that I want to do podcasting that is outside of the LLM model. I don't want to do just dangerous, stupid stuff, but I want to talk about things that I've never explored, where I don't have something, you know, ready.
Do you think AI will ever break out of the LLM, or will it expand?
I don't think the LLMs will. I think that waiting for AGI as the problem is a bad idea. I think the problems are going to get here far before AGI. I think even that, the AGI expectation is something we're trained to do. Do you think AGI is coming? Do you think we'll survive AGI? Will AGI be good or bad? All of that's pre-programmed into you. Why are you waiting for AGI? Did you not AlphaFold 3? Did you track that? Do you know about this?
Was that the chess game?
It's the chess game that became the protein folding game.
Oh,
and you want to talk about great games, protein folding. Now that's a game.
I have no knowledge of this at all.
Okay. What do you know about proteins?
Very little.
Okay, think about proteins as tiny machines.
Yeah.
That there's a copying machine, there's a scissors and a shearing machine, there's a light-making machine, all sorts of things. And all of those machines are weirdly coded. Imagine that you had like a children's show and a bunch of girl superheroes, and they all had necklaces with 20 different kinds of beads around their neck. And so when they needed a machine, they'd take off the necklace and they'd throw it into a thing called a ribosome. The ribosome would take these 20 kinds of pearls and suddenly it would build you a car or a spaceship or a gun or who knows what. Well, that's the story of DNA, RNA, and protein. The only thing is, isn't it weird that a linear sequence suddenly crumples up into a three-dimensional object that does something? So for example, I don't know if you've ever seen these Turkish rabbits that glow in the dark?
No.
Okay, so they took green fluorescent protein out of jellyfish.
Yeah.
And they spliced them into the nucleic acids of rabbits. And the Turks bred all of these glow-in-the-dark bunnies. And what that is a structure. So there's something called secondary structure in protein, where sometimes you get these spirals called alpha helices, and then sometimes you get a two-dimensional sheet that's made from taking a switchback in strings of amino acids. And then if you wrap that around, you don't have a beta sheet, you have a beta barrel. And these beta barrels are the glow-in-the-dark aspect of green fluorescent protein, okay? And what we didn't know was how a series of ACTs and Gs could code for sequences of amino acids could form three-dimensional structures. So if you just read DNA, you didn't know, well, that's going to be a sports car.
Yeah.
Well, AlphaFold figured it out for the most part, like to an enormous extent. Humans were stuck there.
And what does that mean?
It means that you could, you could target your enemies that have particular regions on their cell surfaces, and you could come up with proteins that only attach to them and attack.
With the fascinating interplay of protein structures in mind, the conversation shifts towards the prompt engineering revolution, delving into how AI and humans collaborate and the implications for future careers.
You know, the prompt engineering revolution. They're not good enough to come up with their own prompts. And a great example of this that she and I have been talking about is the cyborg chess era, which is a period where humans and the AIs could form teams that would do better. But at some point, the AI just looks at the human and says, you're just holding me back.
You've got two children.
Yeah.
When they're thinking about their career prospects, with all that you think and know and believe about the future that we're heading towards, what kind of career advice would you be giving to them?
Oh, I've given them terrible career advice. I gave them somewhat different career advice. So to my son, my advice was do the hardest, most technical thing you possibly can do and be prepared to use that ability, that facility, in different ways than you're honing it. But train yourself. With my daughter, I think she cares deeply about people. And, you know, there's a typical male-female divide. And I'm not going to talk overly much about them because I try to keep them out. But she is, somebody who is taking the same level of analytic ability but putting it in the service of the law and trying to help people who are, you know, really unfortunate. She's very idealistic. And so at some level, the law is not going to allow us to have AI lawyers for quite some time. It's not going to trust anything. We've got jury trials and judges and a legal system that's written into our founding documents. To the average person, I would say get your board in the water, and prepare to paddle like all get out. The tsunami of a lifetime is coming, and nothing your elders have seen is going to prepare. There's no good advice to give that's specific. Let's put it this way. One of the things when people tell me about they're moving from one city to another, I have a phrase that nobody likes, which is every place is over. Oh, I'm moving to Austin. Yeah, it's over. Miami, it's over. Nashville, over. You know, all these places are over. And every occupation that is named is over. I'm going to be a dentist, radiologist, accountant, teacher. These are all over. Whatever's coming, get flexible. Get good. Get good on a bunch of different stuff. Learn how to think across disciplines. I have no idea what's going to be left for us. But, you know, somebody's going to come out on top. And I hate to tell people that you should try to come out on top. I don't think it's healthy to have everyone trying to be world class. I think you should be able to just have a life. And I have a golden retriever. I don't know that it's the greatest golden retriever in the world. Sometimes I think it is, but he does a lot of dumb stuff. But he's my golden retriever. I just don't think it. I think that this mania for optimization, like if you look at your own videos, you'll find some of the best performing videos are, this is how to succeed. This is how to get anyone you want. This is how to get out of a bad situation. People just want capacity. But for what? Okay, you've optimized your day. You've optimized your health. Your social media is optimized. Now what?
Now what?
I don't know.
Well, what should be then? Say, you know, is it time to just... One would say, well, now I... One would incorrectly say, well, now I can play with my golden retriever. And then one would say, well, you should have been playing with your golden retriever the whole time.
Let me put it a little differently. Through some bizarre accident, I've gotten a chance to meet incredible people that I don't even talk about who I've met. You know, I've gotten a chance to see the world. I haven't seen South America, but I've seen most of the other continents that, other than the Antarctic. I've had a really rich life. Take somebody who hasn't had those opportunities, but they got a chance to have three kids. I'm not sure I wouldn't trade places. I so enjoyed raising my children. And it's available to everyone. It's such a strange thing that we're talking about optimization, all this stuff. I get to think about the substrate of the universe. Theoretical physics, I dream about visiting the stars. I dream about multiple dimensions of time, meeting aliens, all sorts of things. I still think having kids was like unbeatable. I'm so sad that it's over. I'm so sad that they moved out. I cannot believe that I was dumb enough to live in a society that doesn't believe in having your kids with you your whole life. The idea that we look at places where kids live at home as backwards is beyond me. You know, it's just like family is everything. They drive me crazy. But it's just meaning is available for you. And again, you know, every time I get a chance to eat a rambutan, it's one of my favorite fruits. Mangoes, rambutans, jackfruit, sitafal, if you can get custard apple. The amount of pleasure I get, I've never had a good custard apple in the entire time I've lived in the U.S. Not one. I've had a frozen one imported from Taiwan. You get this cherimoya. Just get out of here, cherimoya. You're not good. Great custard apple, great sitafal or ramfal. What a pleasure to be on this earth. And it's available to almost anyone. I just think that you can find meaning. You know, for God's sakes, go to Spotify if you have a connection. If you can afford a connection to Spotify and put in Pablo Casals' version of the Bach cello suites. you're as rich as you need to be. I've flown private. I'd much prefer to listen to Pablo Casals playing the cello suites in economy than to be deprived of real luxury. I don't know. I just, to me, meaning is everywhere. I can't swing a cat without hitting meaning.
Have you always been like that? Or is that something that you've cultivated? The point about being able to swing a cat and find meaning, so many people that would be listening now could swing a 100-mile stick and wouldn't hit meaning in their lives. But you seem to be able to find it in the purer things, the more simple things. And I'm wondering if that's something that we can all cultivate with a change of perspective, or if it's just the way that you've always been.
Why is Joe Rogan such a big deal? You ever listen to Joe Rogan talk about pugilism? Two gentlemen beating the crap out of each other? As poetry? Mm-hmm. As chess? I could listen to Joe talk about MMA for days.
Having delved into the essence of finding meaning in simplicity, the conversation shifts towards the dynamics of hiring in today's fast-paced world, exploring how platforms like LinkedIn can transform the recruitment process.
But he is the quintessential American.
A business is only as good as the people inside it. I believe in taking time to hire slowly, but I also understand that once you've decided to hire, you want to get the ball rolling and get the best candidates in front of you to start interviewing. And that's where paying to promote your role on LinkedIn makes all the difference, because you'll get applicants 7 times faster than if you post your job for free. And even though slower, more considered hiring is important, you never want your hiring platforms to be what's holding you back. LinkedIn keeps pace. It takes care of the heavy lifting, sending you highly skilled candidates that you wouldn't find anywhere else. So when the time comes to make your next hire, make it count and promote your job on LinkedIn. Head to linkedin.com/DOAC. That's linkedin.com/DOAC, and terms and conditions apply. A second ago, you said you can't believe it doesn't go on forever.
Yeah.
You or the universe or...
I can't believe my story doesn't go on forever. Look, I've never died before, so I have no experience with it. So as far as I know, I've always been alive. And it'll always go on that way. But there's another thing that, you know, I've talked about occasionally, which is I'm not the most public-spirited human being. You know, I am somebody who will take the last rambutan. You know, and I know that you're not supposed to do that in almost any culture on earth, but sometimes it's just sitting there and it bothers me. Okay? So I'm not the classiest person on earth. But I'll tell you something. If you have a kid and you have a choice about eating the rambutan yourself or giving the rambutan to your child, it's a no-brainer. You're going to enjoy the rambutan so much more if you give it to your kid. And you'll see. And that's the way in which this goes on forever. It's great. I mean, just how many young people do I have to yell at? Wow. I don't know if I want to have kids. I don't want to bring anyone into this horrible world.
Why do you
have kids?
It bothers you. I can see it personally bothers you.
Do you have any idea how much hate there is right now for Israel? Do you have any idea how destabilizing this action against Iran was? Do you have any idea how many people have suffered for how long under the mullahs? We are being cheated of Persia. I'm not talking about Iran for the Persians. I'm talking about we are cheated of Persia, the entire planet. One of the greatest societies on earth taken offline. Look. You're catching me on the wrong week. And I don't want to dwell on it. This is just incredibly irresponsible. We're not going to survive this. Israel is certainly not going to survive this. If the Abrahamic world does not get its head out of its ass, if the Christian world does not start to stand up for itself without becoming this Christ is King nightmare. You know, I was in Tel Aviv before this all happened, and I just said from the stage, make the Middle East Christian again. Does nobody understand their role is sort of my question. How can you have Bethlehem without a strong Christian presence? Have you ever been to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre?
No.
Can I give you another assignment?
Yeah.
Get off your ass and go. You got the money. Walk the Stations of the Cross. And for God's sakes, stop with the issue about belief. You can pray like the rest of us. We're not sure if we're praying. We're not sure if the thing is hooked up and anyone's listening. You have the right to go back, even with doubt, even with knowledge. And you have the right to believe about a tomorrow, you know, where you're not going to be, but people are going to be mentioning your name.
When you say that your people are under attack, who are you referencing as your people?
I would, in general, there's several groups of people that I would describe as my people. The Jews would be one. Dyslexics would be another. Americans would be another. Scientists would be another. It depends on what these things. But right now I'm thinking about the Jews, and I'm thinking about the fact that the social media businesses have lost complete control of the bot farms. And we're just seeing this I feel like I'm living through the 1930s again. We've seen this movie before. It doesn't end well. You know, what happened in Gaza is an unbelievable tragedy. And that tragedy was partially architected by the United States of America shoving a two-state solution down the throats of Palestinian Arabs who absolutely do not want a two-state solution. Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, who is continuing to best Bibi Netanyahu from the grave. You know, it's just an amazing feat. Nobody reads anymore, as you know. There's an old Sherlock Holmes story called The Problem at Thor Bridge. You ever heard of it?
No.
So you're British. Sherlock Holmes gets called in on a case in which there's a murder. And the murder is traced to this gentleman who still exists. What Sherlock Holmes figures out is that it's not a murder, it's a suicide in which the gun will fall into the river at Thor Bridge because it's tied to a weight. And the person uses the suicide to frame someone else. You know, it's just one of these genius little vignettes. And that's what Sinwar was. He was a genius. He knew he was going to die.
Who was Sinwar? Sinwar's the person who's
committed suicide. Sinwar's suicide was an IDF-assisted suicide. I wrote about this almost instantly after the October 7th invasion. It didn't make any sense that Gaza would undertake such an act against Israel, given the asymmetry. And what this mirrored was that before the 1990s...
So you think Sinwar committed suicide to then cause the people of Gaza to invade Israel?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Sinwar would be happy enough for all the Gazans to die. And so what he did was he architected a situation in which Israel would be compelled to respond using the wrong tools. He tricked Israel. And, I'm very confident to talk about this because if you check my old tweets, I say IDF-assisted suicide and Munchausen by proxy, and Zugzwang, right? And I said, these are the concepts. Familiarize with yourself because Israel is going to invade Gaza. And I knew what was going to happen because it took me, like, why would you do this? It doesn't make sense from first-order logic. But third- and fourth-order logic, you're like, oh, of course it makes sense. This is hybrid war. The most important thing for Sinwar is video.
Why?
Look at the effect of the video. The video of Gaza has turned the world to an extent against Israel that's sort of inconceivable. There's a doctrine called hybrid warfare. And I think it came out of the U.S. in the early 2000s. And it says that the kinetic component of warfare, the killing, the actual shooting and the planes and the bombs and all this kind of stuff, is not the major component. The social media is really important. The video is important. The mimetic complex is important. And Israel has an advantage over the Gazan Arabs in kinetic warfare. And Sinwar knew that, and he was like, brilliant. All we need to do is force Israel to come after us. And this is this thing I was gonna say, before the 1990s, we had a spate of killings of policemen firing on people who had pulled toy guns on them. And we would say things, and I remember this, like, whatever you do, don't point a toy gun at a policeman. Don't you realize what's gonna happen? And then somebody coined the phrase, police-assisted suicide.
With the complexities of modern warfare laid bare, the conversation shifts towards the broader geopolitical landscape, where perceptions of power and stability are increasingly challenged, urging a reevaluation of our global priorities.
You'll be in a large group. And if you basically have the idea that Russia, you know, was minding its own business and the U.S. was encircling it, and good Russia, bad U.S., you'll have a lot of company for that perspective. I don't sound like any of that. The most important thing is to stabilize the world again, and we're not going to get another chance like World War II if we're not smart. We're crazy to give up this order that we have. And again, you know, one more time, I'm talking about this stuff, and I don't want to be talking about this stuff. Elon is 100% right. We can't talk about problems all the time. It's cheap meaning. There's an entire universe to explore. And we're sitting here focused on our own drama, always. And I'm getting sucked into it. I don't want it. I want to be talking about traveling through time and space using Easter eggs and hidden features of what we thought was the space-time continuum.
Because I talked about ketosis on this podcast and ketones, a brand called Ketone IQ sent me their little product here. And it was on my desk when I got to the office. I picked it up, it sat on my desk for a couple of weeks. Then one day, I tried it. And honestly, I have not looked back ever since. I now have this everywhere I go. When I travel all around the world, it's in my hotel room, my team will put it there. Before I did the podcast recording today that I've just finished, I had a shot of Ketone IQ. And as is always the case, when I fall in love with a product, I called the CEO and asked if I could invest a couple of million quid into their company. So I'm now an investor in the company as well as them. I would love you to try one and see the impact it has on you, your focus, your productivity, and your endurance. So if you want to try it today, visit ketone.com/Stephen for 30% off your subscription. That's ketone.com/Stephen. I'm excited for you, and that means you have value. You can sell digital products, coaching, communities, and you don't need any coding experience either, just the drive to start. This is a business I really believe in, and already $300 million has been earned by creators, coaches, and entrepreneurs just like you have the potential to be on Standstore. These are people who didn't wait, who heard me saying things like this, and instead of procrastinating, started building, then launched something, and now they're getting paid to do it. Stand is incredibly simple and incredibly easy, and you can link it with a Shopify store that you're already using if you want to. I'm on it, and so is my girlfriend and many of my team. So if you want to join, start by launching your own business with a free 30-day trial. Visit stephenbartlett.stan.store and get yours set up within minutes. I've got this this picture that I came across.
Tell me.
Well, I'd love you to tell me. This is the Flower of Life geometric model, and I was reading through some of your work and I came across this sentence that said you'd kept a secret for 30 years in terms of your belief about the nature of the reality that we live in, and that you thought maybe it was more than just the dimensions we experience. Maybe there was 14 dimensions. I wonder this a lot, you know, because we're fixated on problems. We're fixated on what we see and what we hear and what we feel. But I wonder sometimes if even that is an illusion. I've spent a lot of time actually thinking recently about the simulation theory, and is this whole reality just some simulation on some kid's video game in another dimension? So I thought, you know, you're a physicist.
Do me a favor. Put that in a triangle pattern here. Okay, so we have three mugs. Think of those as vertices of a tetrahedron. And think of this coaster floating here as the fourth vertex.
Mm-hmm.
For every two vertices, so the number of vertices we would agree is four.
Yeah. What's does vertice mean?
Points.
Yeah. One, two, three, four.
Idealize these three things and this as points.
Mm-hmm.
Draw a line segment between all of these four vertices. How many line segments are there?
One, two, three, four. Five, six. Six?
Yep. So there's six edges, four vertices. How many triangular faces that have three vertices on them?
Oh, four.
Yeah. This is how to think about the actual dimensions that we have open to us. The four faces we know about. The key point that I was trying to get at is, I don't believe that you just have the four dimensions. I believe that you have all six edges are dimensions. And all four vertices are also dimensions. I'm talking about a hidden world. It's very interesting. Physics has gone stagnant in terms of how we usually measure progress. The way we measure progress is the change in something called the action or the Lagrangian, a specialized device. And that used to change a lot. And then in 1973, it stopped changing. The major thing that we have is we have no new ideas about how to change the Lagrangian that anybody finds that exciting or interesting. So there's been no progress. Nobody goes to Stockholm to get a Nobel Prize because they changed the Lagrangian of the world.
What's the Lagrangian?
The Lagrangian, so you probably think about physics in terms of equations, like yeah. Maxwell's equations or the Einstein equations or whatever. Think about an equation as being not the primary thing that physicists think about. So I give this example. The Beatles had four basically different configurations. When Ringo was the front man, he was singing Octopus's Garden. George Harrison is singing While My Guitar Gently Weeps. You know, Paul is singing about Penny Lane and John is singing about Strawberry Fields Forever. Those four equations, those would be those different configurations of the Beatles with one of them front and everybody else backing the front man would be the equations. But the Beatles would be the Lagrangian. It's the thing that generates the four different configurations.
Okay.
And there's this bizarre force field that anybody who wants to talk about physics and doing something new, in particular leaving or traversing time, or multiple dimensions of time, anything that's really close to what might be possible gets slammed. We don't know why. Because it's very cheap to explore ideas, and we have no new ideas. But the only thing about a new idea in physics is that a new idea changes the balance of power in the world. So remember the thing I was saying about AlphaFold 3?
Yeah.
AlphaFold 3 changed the balance of power in the world. Bitcoin changed the balance of power in the world. The Diffuse proposal from the EcoHealth Alliance changed the balance of power in the world if that was the source of the COVID virus. Anytime somebody has a really big idea, and the biggest idea, and you know, I talk about this, people don't grasp it, probably the most dangerous thought anyone has ever had was Rutherford in 1911 saying, I wonder whether there's a neutral version of the proton. It doesn't sound dangerous. But it's hard to send a proton into a bunch of protons because it's positively charged and a massive nucleus is really positively charged. And so there's a repulsion. If there's a neutral version of the proton, and these things are barely stuck together with a strong force, even though they're trying to scream away from each other because they're all positively charged, you can send a neutral version of the proton right into the center. Tap, and just imagine you have a bunch of magnets that are trying to flee from each other, and the Velcro around them is barely holding it together. So now you have a bullet in the form of a neutral proton, a neutron, and it hits this thing where the magnets want to come apart, and the Velcro is barely holding it together. Well, that idea led to the chain reaction.
And the nuclear bomb?
Well, that was the fission bomb. And then a geometer, so I'm a geometer and not a physicist, and a physicist named Edward Teller, and the geometer is named Stanislaus Ulam, said, I wonder if there's a way to take the chemical bomb that creates the fission bomb.
With the intriguing dynamics of nuclear forces laid bare, the conversation shifts dramatically, diving into the unexpected intersections of finance and gravity, where even the most brilliant minds converge.
Yeah.
What the fuck was he doing talking about bloody gravity if he's a financier?
It was very important to get Nobel laureates and some of the smartest people on Earth to come to the Virgin Islands and talk about gravity. Stephen Hawking was there, David Gross was there, Lawrence Krauss was there, Lisa Randall was there, right before his conviction. And I'm telling you, he was very focused on the Harvard Math Department, and he knew all about me in ways that he wasn't supposed to.
I have to be clear on my understanding of what you're saying. From what I understood, and you can say, Steve, I'm not going to answer that, whatever, but I just have to, because you've opened up a curiosity hole in my mind,
sure.
So let me try and fill it, even if it's the conversation I had with Chris.
I'll just evade you.
Fine. You're within the right to evade me, and I hold the right to ask, which is, what I'm hearing is you believe, and I'm just going to say it how I think it, is what I'm hearing is you believe that Jeffrey Epstein was not a financier. He was planted in some way to interfere.
He was a construct, is what I said.
He was a construct in some way to mess with the progression of physics.
Jeffrey Epstein, apparently, I think some, I'll tell you what I said. When I met him, when the meeting was over, I immediately called my wife and I said, I have just met a construct. She said, what do you mean? I said, this person is not who they claim to be. Somebody has constructed this human being to be something that they are not, which is a hedge fund genius. Somebody who could understand the euro and the yen like nobody else. Bullshit. Not true. I believe that whoever constructed Jeffrey Epstein was running multiple different programs through the same thing, having put in a large initial investment. It wasn't about one thing. If you build a mall, you don't just have clothing stores in the mall. You have a food court in the mall, right? You have jewelry in the mall. You have all sorts of different things in the mall. Jeffrey Epstein was a construct of something that was running multiple things. One of those things was science. And I don't think that the science and the pedophilia were necessarily in the same bucket. He was funding all sorts of people. I don't think everybody at that, you know, part of the problem with calling his plane the Lolita Express and calling his island Pedophile Island is that you just can't see all the different things that were going through this guy. I don't think almost any of those scientists are exposed, you know, maybe a few of them, but very few of them, to anything really horrible. I think he was trying to keep a periscope on everything that was interesting. And I think that his girlfriend's father, Robert Maxwell, was all through scientific publishing. And I think Pergamon Press was in part a control mechanism for making sure that revolutionary discoveries were taking place within a framework. Anybody can, look, you can write a Substack article and you can hit post and suddenly the world has access to your Substack article. That is a nightmare. What if somebody posts, you know, weaponized anthrax? What if they do the equivalent of saying, what if there's a neutral proton?
So you think he was controlling science?
I think that Robert Maxwell was in part trying to control science. I think Jeffrey Epstein was in part trying to fund science, trying to control it. I don't really know. Again, you know, part of the problem with why conspiracy theorists have a bad name is that they're not content to live in ignorance. And I mean, I am. I know something is really off with this story. If you look at me saying things like, you don't know whether Biden is going to make it to November, ha, 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 Eric, you know, what an idiot, blah, 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 okay? Then he has a debate. He doesn't make it to November. You know, I'm not Nostradamus. I'm just dumb enough to say something in public that makes sense. Let me say something in public that makes sense. our national security people suck at their jobs. The people who are in charge of the Department of Energy, which is masking the Department of Physics, which is masking the Department of Nuclear Weapons, right? The Atomic Energy Acts, which are really about atomic weaponry, recast as Atoms for Peace or who knows what. Jeffrey Epstein, who is not a disgraced financier. The newspapers that have always had a national interest component and have liaisons so that they can work with the CIA and the State Department and they do each other's bidding and scratch each other. This whole network is what I've called managed reality. We live in managed reality. We are all in some version of the Truman Show. And you can look at it, you can Google it. I can give you a million search terms. And every time I give a million search terms, you'll watch my reputation get torn apart. Are you going to blame me that you didn't know what the whole of society approach is because you didn't know the Daniel Inouye Center for Security in the Pacific came up with an idea for soft fascism to fight hybrid wars? You didn't know what hybrid warfare? Look at my talk at ARC, Jordan Peterson's group, the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. It's at almost 2 million views. And why is it? Because people are saying, I didn't know these terms. Did you know what the Human Terrain Project is? Do you know about human terrain? You're a mountain, I'm a valley. And instead of war planners figuring out how do we use that valley to capture that mountaintop because it gives us an eagle's nest to snipe from or whatever, they say, okay, this is the second most powerful podcast in the world, second to Joe Rogan. How do we capture him?
Fuck. Leave me alone, please.
No, but that's what I'm trying to say. You're human terrain.
Yeah.
When the human terrain wakes up and says, wait a minute, I'm human terrain? Well, my feeling is, if you don't want me to talk about this on a podcast, then keep your terms separate. Nobody knew the term pre-bunked malinformation. Do you know what pre-bunked malinformation is? Malinformation is information we don't want to get out. Technically, people try to pretend that it's information that will be misinterpreted, but really it's real stuff that is deleterious to the narratives that we're trying to push forward and what we're trying to do. And pre-bunked means discredited. So we know what debunked, we have to debunk disinformation. We get that. But you didn't know that we had to pre-bunk malinformation, which is we have to destroy truth tellers.
What do you think that means for people like me as podcasters? You know, because we're doing these long-form conversations.
Snap back. You'll say, that was a really interesting talk. And then you'll have somebody else on who'll be talking about the importance of melatonin and how we don't understand the role of sleep. And you'll have somebody else, on who'll be talking about how do you do a clothing brand from scratch and turn it into a billion-dollar unicorn. You're not going to stay here on this topic. This is your time with me, and it'll have some effect, and it'll start to fade. And that's what this is. I'd love to be doing my podcast. I just don't know how to do it safely. I want to talk about taking our lives back from Silicon Valley, even though those people are my friends.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website, podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.